Good morning. Is that working? It's working. Okay. Welcome to the Josephine County Weekly Business Board of Commissioners Weekly Business Session. Today is July 20th, 2016. It's 9 a.m. And if you please stand, we'll say the Pledge of Allegiance. First item on the agenda this morning, we have a public hearing, item 1A, which is the legalization proceeding for a portion of Allen Creek Road, which is County Road 3410. And we have Mr. Brandis with us this morning from the Public Works Department.
Good morning, Commissioners. So as you are aware, this process for the Allen Creek legalization has been moving onward. This was initiated by the project that the city and county are undertaking to improve Allen Creek Road, and as one of the early steps in that process is obviously getting a survey on the ground. Through the course of that, it was determined that there's a conflict between survey points of about 13 feet. These are documents going back 60 and 70 years. I've got our in-house surveyor, Richard Pike, here with me, as well as Pat Gaylord. He's with HHPR, the company that's running this for the city. They can give you more of the technical details, but I guess just the bigger picture, the legalization of a road this size really, whether or not this project was taking place, needs to happen. A perfect example is we were talking with Pat this morning. There's a landowner out there that is in the process of putting up a new fence that obviously doesn't agree with one of these two surveys that are done. So there's been structures built over the years based on one of these two surveys that needs to be normalized to a single unified point. That's where you come in as the county's road authority and a board. So again, whether or not this project happens, this is an important step that we need to take. There's dozens of roads across the county that this could be done on. It's just obviously a time-intensive and money-intensive process. So short of a trigger like this project, it typically doesn't happen. And standard practice on these things would be to shoot the middle of the road, which is what this seeks to do. So the established road, as folks drive down it, would be assumed as the new middle point. And again, I'll let the surveyors get into more of that level of detail. But for today, for the hearing, this is more a matter of giving you the chance as the board to legalize the findings of effectively trying to normalize these two surveys. So that's what I've got.
Questions? Are you going to, I guess, just give a more general overview of the discrepancy, just alluding to 13 feet?
Yes.
I'm not really sure, you know, for the public's sake, for this matter of a hearing, mm-hmm. To kind of give some backstory on specifically what is in error.
Yes.
And then you alluded to the idea that the center line, obviously the established from greater than 10 years, is going to be not the new, well, the official is
right.
What it would be considered, in
right.
my opinion. Because it'd be the historic place where nobody drove 13 feet one direction off the center line.
Right.
That would be ridiculous. And everybody's been kind of basing it on the survey that established that center line.
Sure.
All we're doing is making that official.
Right. And when folks are putting up a new fence or whatever else or a garage, it's based on, hey, I'm back out of the way of where I'm assuming is the boundaries of the road and the right-of-way. Right. Yeah. So I'll leave the technical
okay.
parts to the surveyors. But, yeah.
Great.
That's
great.
The overview. Okay. Thanks.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Richard Pike with Public Works, and Rob pretty much hit the highlights of it. And just to expand a little more what he said, what we asked HHPR to do for us was to just define what's already been assumed as the center line of the road and as the right-of-way of that road. That's all we were asking them to do. I think you'll find Mr. Gaylord will let you know that error that happened, the 13-foot error, was more in the north-south direction, so it really doesn't affect the east-west, which would affect where the old ditches and fences and those kinds of things were. It's going to affect more the north-south than it does the east-west of that road. So
Can you talk about the negative impacts to property owners? Or is everybody going to have to move their fences 13 feet in a direction, or what is that? How does this recognition of this roadway or establishing it have an impact on the residents? I think that's really what the people want to know.
Okay, well, we certainly aren't going to require them to move their fences north and south. If there's an issue between two property owners, I guess that would be more in a civil matter kind of a thing. But it's not something that we're going to ask them to do.
I think it's that's fine. So what happens with this new road development, people's properties being developed in the future, is this going to change how that development would go forward from a standpoint that maybe last year or 5 years ago, they would have used the historic, what everybody else has used for quite some time.
And that's what we're taking that historic and making it
official.
Official, okay. Is your word correct?
So everything that's there right now would kind of just stay the way it is.
The way it is right
and
now.
And any future stuff.
Any future stuff that the city might do, where they widen the road, and then they'll have to resolve that as that project. In my mind, that's a separate project.
I think
anything that happens with that will have to be resolved at that time.
I think that's clear. The future development would use this. This is actually a good thing for future development, not making people who have property lines and things that are potentially 13 feet off,
right,
seemingly all 37 properties or homeowners in that area,
right,
rather than everybody moving, just saying, this is where it's at.
And that's why we're trying to do what everybody had already assumed to be.
Okay.
You know, establishing the center line pretty much where the center line stripe actually is on the physical ground. So when people walk by, that's what they had assumed it to be. So that was our direction.
It sounds like a positive thing for everybody in that area and to getting it established before the city starts doing its project and really, you know, putting pen to paper and finalizing things that it's done in the right spot. I might be wrong, but it...
That's exactly how I view it, too.
Sounds like a good thing that, frankly, what Mr. Brandis was alluding to, the other streets that are in this, people are putting up fences every year, maybe more so right now.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be great to have them in the right spot? So this is a good thing. Thank you.
Just for reiteration of clarification, agreeing to this item today has nothing at all to do with the possibility of road shape, direction, width, widening. It has nothing to do with that.
That's strictly a City of Grants Pass project that I'm sure they're planning to follow here in the next year or two, something like that.
Well, and even the county, as far as the county, if we agree to this, future development, direction of that road, Allen Creek Road, that still needs to come to us as far as our final stamp of agreement goes. This has nothing to do with that final decision. We're going to make this into a mountain crest road trail or something. This is simply verifying that that center line, that yellow line now, is the center of the road.
Center line of the road is the center line of the right-of-way.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay. Anyone else from Public Works wish to make a statement?
Good morning. Thank you for having me here today. My name is Pat Gaylord. I'm with Harper Hoff Peterson Regalis, HHPR. I'm the survey manager with that firm and here to answer your questions with regards to this issue. To give you a little bit of a history on how this discrepancy between the monuments came about, in 1931 there was a survey that was done that set monumentation out there, pins in the ground. That was done by one of your county engineers. And Oregon didn't have a Survey Recording Act until 1947. So there was subsequent surveys that took place that the records may or may not have been available to, you know, other surveyors that were working out there. All of that monumentation is still there. But in 1973, there was another survey that was done that did not recover one of those original pins. They set their own, and this is near the center of the road. So that creates the discrepancy. But all of the surveys since 1973 have held that 73 work as being what they believe to be true. As part of our work, we retraced all of that. We worked closely with your staff to come up with this resolution. The center of the road that's being proposed in the legal description that we've provided to you is not exactly the painted center line. It's close, but it's based on the survey monumentation that's on the ground. But it has the most consistency with the work that's been done since 1973, and it protects the property owners on either side of the road the best with the road right away. Our work doesn't do anything to resolve the issues with private improvements on either side of the road as far as how they go back away from the road. But this legal description and the monumentation that we've held best preserves everything that's out there on the ground with the least impact to the public and provides the 40-foot right-of-way that's believed to have been there all along, that's shown on the assessor's maps currently and things like that.
Is this, out of curiosity, is this a fairly common occurrence, or is this unique to us?
I've worked in about 19 counties in Oregon, and this is very common across Oregon. It just, you know, old roads that started out as wagon roads or market roads that have, you know, been developed over time. Sometimes it's due to survey discrepancies, which in part is this situation. Sometimes it's due to lack of records, but yeah, it's not uncommon.
We're going to fire that surveyor. Just kidding.
I don't think you'll have to worry about that.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
All right, I'm going to open the hearing to public comment. Each person will have 3 minutes to address this topic only, as this is a hearing on this subject. Anyone wish to speak on this topic? It's 9:12, yes, I'm sorry, 9:12. I forgot to say the time. Yes, sir. Please state your name and your address. You don't have to give the street number, just...
My name is Barry McCarthy, and the number on my house is 1250. Just a quick question for Mr. Heck, just to get some clarification on what you said. The intent of today's meeting is primarily just the placement or survey of this road north to south. It's got nothing to do with the project. That will come at a later time. We'll be able to stand here and speak to it.
That's correct.
I know there's been some meetings in the past over by where we live, and we got this from the department here in town. Talks about, a meeting coming up. This was a couple weeks ago, about some of the information on here. All I saw regarding today's meeting was a sign I saw on a dead-end post on Allen Creek Road. This is how I found out about today's meeting. And then down at the end in Denton, there's another flyer on a building block down there.
So you're really supposed barricade. To just be addressing the board.
Please talk forward to the microphone.
I'm sorry. So this is how I was aware of today's meeting, these two things that I just happened to see on a walk. These upcoming meetings that Mr. Heck mentioned, or I'm mentioning about the future of this project, we'll be notified in something other than just this way. We'll be notified in the mail about upcoming
and
events.
The newspapers.
Newspapers only?
No. And in the newspapers.
Do you have a best guess, sir, on when these meetings might occur?
Before Christmas of 27,002.
So probably sometime after today, then.
Yes, sometime.
Thank you
after
very
today.
Much.
Yes, thank you. Yes, this is just about the survey. It's not about the other hearings that will be coming in the future in regards to configuration and location and all of that, and property owners, and those will be noticed. Anyone who is affected will receive a direct notice, but it will also be posted in the newspaper. Okay. Anyone else wish to comment?
And it would be fair to say that none of those prospective future meetings have even yet been scheduled.
Anyone else? Okay. Not being any others, I will close the public hearing at 9:14. Okay, moving on to our administrative actions, number 2A. which is the approval of Order 2016-028 in the matter of authorized legalization of this portion of Allen Creek Road, County Road 3410. Commissioner Hare.
Yes, we've just been addressing this issue. This is to kind of explain how our agenda works today. The legislative hearing is a statutory requirement for what we're about to do. The administrative calendar are things that change policy or change budget. We'll review those items, not very lengthy because we've already done this portion. And the second item, we'll take public comment and then come back and make a decision on those as a board. So you'll have another opportunity. The hearing is just a specific opportunity to address that. The item number three, you can talk about anything you want. You can talk about the Allen Creek project coming up, what things you'd like to see, or any other subject you choose. So I don't really have much more to say other than what has been thoroughly presented this morning. I want to thank the staff for the diligence in this. That isn't, it's kind of a judgment call on how we go about trying to find a solution to problems that we've all inherited. I don't think anybody was working for the county in 1973 or had anything to do with really causing this issue. We really also don't have much to do with the Allen Creek project. I'm the liaison to that, and I did work with the RV Act contingent at the time in 2011-12, I believe, when RV Act agreed to reappropriate the funds that were dedicated to the South Y to two projects in Josephine County. So the money stayed over here. It was roughly about $4.5 million. I don't know that we saw all of that, but there's a portion of that $950,000 that was dedicated to the Allen Creek project, and then the balance was dedicated to Exit 61, $2.6 million. That project has already been completed, phases 1 through 3 or 4, something like that, and nobody needs to be told, but we're still working on the Allen Creek issue because of the complexity and things like this. We're really going to try to be diligent, and from a county's perspective, we're contributing $120,000 to that project. It's a county thoroughfare right now. We have it in our jurisdiction. We give it over to the city when it's brought up to city standards. So right now it's under the maintenance agreement for Josephine County to maintain that road. And for development to really happen without being a cost to the people in that area, it's really kind of a positive thing, if you can think about it that way, that someone else, I guess everyone cumulatively, is paying for this infrastructure improvement. It's not on the backs of the property owners, which is sometimes the case in other street development areas within the city. You're assessed a fee, and you will pay for your frontage of sidewalk and all of those things. So I don't believe that's exactly a component. The city is really driving this project as something they have in their plan and to improve transportation infrastructure in that area to facilitate growth. So other than that, we're working diligently to try to refine the design to have the least impact, try to slow traffic down. I think that's been a very high concern. So it isn't kind of a landing strip style road project, that we have plenty of access for bike ped types of opportunities for people in that area, and to try to get them off of the street, removed from the traffic thoroughfare as much as possible. It's actually Councillor DeYoung is on the RV Act, and he's pretty passionate about not having. He says, "I don't want my 5-year-old grandson riding right next to potentially a lot of traffic. They should have the opportunity to use wider sidewalks and that sort of thing." So, the board has been champions of maybe, you know, having a jog in the road so that it doesn't feel like a landing strip. All of these things are issues that we are experimenting and exploring as options, but that's not really the purview of what we are doing today. I just wanted to provide a brief update before you guys make your comments. I am the liaison to Public Works, so Rob and I and his office are going to be working diligently going forward, but Commissioner Heck is right. There's been no finalization, even plan, set in place. We don't have a date and time certain. And I apologize, that's probably not very reassuring to you, but we will schedule something, and it will likely happen this fall, is when we plan to get it done, sometime between the summer and the fall. So we'd like something of a resolve and really want to work with the homeowners in that area. I know a number of them personally. We're going to do our best to try to make it really positive if possible.
One of the additional problems with this whole particular instance is you're having to work not just with county or not just with city, having to work with two government agencies, city and county.
And state.
And state. So if anything can get convoluted and stretched out, this is that very item. My concerns, as Commissioner Hare alluded to, my concerns are that this is not a one done deal. It is not going to be a new hybrid connecting speedway between two points. And I'm hesitant, reluctant to raise my hand and say, yes, whatever you want, we're going to make that thing as slick as possible. I don't want that myself personally, and that has been expressed in different meetings and that kind of a thing with different individuals. But it's far from being a done deal. This issue is simply to take how many ever years of confusion and legalize it and say, basically, that yellow strip down the middle of that road, that's the center line of the road. And that's what this issue is about.
Thank you. Item 2B, approval of Chamber Business Retention and Expansion, the BR&E funding request. About every 3 years, the Josephine County Chamber of Commerce grants pass check, Josephine County, both. Chamber of Commerce does the business retention and expansion study with the businesses here locally. The last one was in 2014, so they're preparing to do this one in 2017, and they have asked us to assist them with funding as they have in the past. They've requested money from the City of Grants Pass, $6,000. They're requesting $4,500 from us, and after they do this survey, which takes it actually is personal interviews. They don't just send out forms. They do personal interviews with business owners and Josephine County and compile the data in regards to those businesses' needs as far as to expand or any assistance to grow. Has everything to do with zoning, land use, funding issues that they have coming up, or to build community capacity to sustain the growth that we would like to go forward with in the community. And to anticipate what future businesses they think need to be brought here that would help them as well. Excuse me. And then to help those businesses to use the programs that are available to them, whether they're through the county, the city, economic development funds that we have, or whether it might be through SoReady, Rogue Valley Council of Governments, which is RVCOG. So there's a lot of different resources that some businesses aren't aware of. So what this study does is find out those needs. The last time they did the survey, which was in 2014, the two things that kept coming to the surface in that study, which have been now pursued by the chamber as far as conducting some classes and providing information and assisting these people, had to do with customer service and with the business. Pardon?
Family transitions.
Yeah, family transitions. And so when you have a family business, who's going to take over that business, and how do you go about making that transition of ownership when one family member wishes to retire and a younger one take over? Or if you don't have a younger one take over, how do you keep that business as a viable part of the community if they employ people here? So those are the two things that came out of the two main things, not the only things, that came out of the one in 2014. So, in moving forward, they're going to do this again, which would be the 3 years in 2017, and they're asking us to assist them with this $4,500 grant. So, that being said, any other comment on that? Okay. We will move then to the requests and comments from citizens. Again, you will have 3 minutes. You can comment on any agenda item today or bring another issue before the board. You will be addressing the board. Please speak into the microphone. It moves, so if whichever direction you need to move it to speak into it. And 3 minutes, give your address. You don't need to give your street number, just the street you live on. We don't need numbers. So I'll start over here. Anyone wish to speak?
Madam Chair, before you, we failed to mention to Mr. McCarthy that this hearing notice was published in accordance with how we're supposed to do hearings. We're not actually supposed to go put them on the street signs or something in the area. There isn't an official notice requirement for the residents, apparently, because that didn't happen, or there is. I think that would be important to reference. When you have a hearing, how you publicize it is pretty key, and it's governed by state statutes or something. So maybe somebody could come and reference that. That was the point that was made during the hearing. We really should reference. Yes, please. looking at my notes and said we didn't address that.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where you live at, but we legal counsel told us what we had to do, and we did have to do those postings that you saw. In addition to that, everybody that lives on that road that touches that portion of Allen Creek Road received a notice by mail, a certified mail. So everybody out there, and that was part of the requirement too.
There's also, I think for hearings, we publish something in the newspaper as well.
I don't know that that's a requirement. I don't know if that got
probably done. Not for this one, to legalize a portion of the road, maybe not.
Right.
So I think that a lot of our hearings require that we publish things in the paper, I know for a budget. We have to do it 4 times successively, 4 weeks prior to our first hearing. That's just one example of hearings. So they're all governed differently. But
right, and this one didn't have that requirement. It did have the certified mail and the postings on the road itself.
Oh, okay.
Yes. That was by a law.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So if you have any further questions or anybody here has further questions on that issue, I suggest you contact Public Works. Okay. Thank you. Okay, anyone wish to speak? I'm going to start with Mr. Ford and then the gentleman right behind you.
Larry Ford, 136 Ferry Road, Grants Pass. Recently, Governor Brown was down here, and one of her parts of her speech is she seems to be following the liberal administration from the federal government and our current king, Obama. And if she can't get gun control passed through legislation like it should be, she's going to do an executive order, whatever her whim is, and I'm sure that will have something to do with the Bloomberg effect, because that seems to be where a lot of the Democrats are following. Hopefully, if you guys are willing, if that happens, we can enact our home rule county and oppose that sort of legislation. We have laws on the books now that the federal government and the state government don't seem to be very interested in pursuing or enforcing, which would take care of not all the problems that have been having, but it would certainly help and would reduce a lot of these criminal activities that are going on now. So if she does go ahead and follow that agenda for any sort of an executive order without the vote of the people, hopefully as county commissioners you will oppose that. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good morning. My name is Greg Armstrong. I live at 2323 Allen Creek Road in the subject area of earlier discussion. My primary concern originally was that to protect our current property lines and improvements, which has been answered. To answer the question that came up about notification, we who live in the subject area did receive by certified mail notification in May, the month of May, of this hearing, and it was posted in 3 places along the road. As far as publication in the Courier, I've never noticed that. But just to answer that part of the question, my reason for addressing you now is what Mr. Heck brought up, the concern of the different government bodies that are going to be involved and already are involved in this proposed improvement. And we as citizens, and me specifically, are concerned that we don't get lost in the wash. For those who are absentee landlords or looking for development, I understand their position. But for those who live there on the street and intend to stay there, we want to protect our interests as much as we can. We're concerned about speed. Already is an issue in that area, and it's a dead-end street. And what that would become is a through street. It is all residential in that area and semi-rural. No commercial in that stretch of road at all. And our worry, or my worry, is the proposed forcible acquisition of personal property by the city of Grants Pass and other jurisdictions to make this happen. They've already told us that that's what their intention is. And to go from a 20-foot piece of pavement, which is arguably undersized, to 68 feet of concrete and asphalt is a dramatic change that will have a dramatic impact on all of us, some good and some not so good, to go from that drastic a change. We got 39 plus property owners, 60 driveways, 40 Pacific power poles, all kinds of infrastructure. The cost is huge. I'm concerned about all that. So, thank you.
Anyone else on this side wish to speak? Okay. Anyone over here on this side? Yes, sir. Give it to her so she can record it.
Thanks, Mr. Hart.
That way it doesn't get lost. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Bob Hart on West Evans Creek. This morning I've been asked by Jim Frick to speak to you on behalf of SORA, Southern Oregon Resource Alliance. They became aware of the Southern Oregon Regional Pilot Project and the conclusions. They were drafted and sent to the Board of Commissioners on June 15th by Dick Converse, principal planner from RV COG. We've developed a response to that statement from Mr. Converse because the conclusions we don't feel accurately represent the best interest of Josephine County. To give you a quick background, the regional pilot project was supposed to allow the three Southern Oregon counties to look for regional differences from the rest of the state to see if we can come up with some things that are more beneficial for land use in the three counties, talking primarily about farmland, forest land, and non-resource land. We touched on a number of other things, including deer winter habitat. As farms in Josephine County, 85% of the farms are less than 10 acres in size. State standards require an 80-acre minimum lot size and a very high income requirement to be able to put a house on farmland. We felt that this was a perfect opportunity to address those issues that are specific to Southern Oregon because we do have a very vibrant farming community. But they don't have the large commercial acreages such as in the Willamette Valley. So we ask that you review the response that we've prepared so you can participate in getting a final determination or recommendation to the state of Oregon on this pilot project. We also looked at forestry. That's one of the other issues. The state wants to bring the threshold down to identify forest land to, they would prefer 20 acres or 20 cubic feet per acre as identifying forest land. Nobody down here in this hot environment with little summer rainfall would be able to survive on a 20 cubic foot per acre standard. Jackson County, they kind of are ambivalent. They would accept a 50 cubic foot per acre. Douglas County has in their comprehensive plan where they did specific economic analysis, they adopted an 85 cubic foot per acre threshold for commercial forest land, and that's what this is supposed to identify as commercial. Then if you say that it's not commercial, you should be able to have some other type of system to identify and work with forest land, whether it's a smaller minimum lot size or some other standards of putting dwellings on, things like that. That's covered in the response that we've provided from SORA. So we'd ask you to review this. Time is of the essence. I know that this program started in 2012. It's concluding. And Josephine County had a hard time because we've lost two planning directors and staff during that time, and there was no continuity. So we would ask that you would be involved in this, in its final determination of what to do.
Thank you, Mr. Hart.
Thank you.
Okay, did I see another hand over here? No? Yes, Mr. Haugen.
Excuse me. Name is Harold Haugen, Josephine County. Quick question before I start my time. When do you take an action on your administrative actions?
After
all of this? Okay. My questions are related to the same letter that Mr. Hart brought up, June 15th, 2016, letter from Dick Converse to the Josephine County Commissioners on the Southern Oregon Project. Two areas. The last page on the first one I think is misleading. The county says here, prior to LCDC acknowledgement, Josephine County worked with DLCD. We did, but it was in an adversarial role. It was not in a friendly situation. They placed an enforcement order on us over 100,000 acres of land unless we accepted their particular plan for us in Josephine County. That needs to be clarified. The other one is on the second page under the forest production standard, and it's the last page or last sentence. DLCD opposes the use of the CIR method because it includes assumptions from future costs and revenues, which it contends are not determining whether or not land is adequate for commercial forestry. I'm the only one left that sat on the board and in a meeting with DLCD, LCDC, the Department of Forestry, the state, BLM, and Forest Service that came up with our CIR plan. The state did not like it until they came down and we spent a full day in a meeting. Jim Ross, the executive director, finally admitted, he says, this is one heck of a way to classify commercial forest, and we accept it. LCDC and DLCD accepted our CIR plan, which now they're saying they reject. And I guess I think that's an inappropriate use, and I think we need to clarify that better. And in due to the lack of time, that's probably all I got to say, unless you have some questions.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anyone else I missed? Wish to speak? Now's your opportunity. Okay, I'll bring it back to the board.
Madam Chair, I'm going to start with Mr. Haugen's comments. I think they're really well-founded. I have an appreciation for the CIRR formula that I've employed a number of times in land use hearings. I think we got a directive from the state that they would no longer wanted to accept that on its own. They wanted it in conjunction with their internal rate of the cubic feet per acre assessment. So our forestry surveyors have actually been applying both for the last couple of years, which is cumbersome and not always giving you a very clear outcome, which makes it challenging for the board to make a determination of properties that are on that threshold. The easy stuff has usually already been done, so everything that comes to the board is a challenging decision, and really, you know, it's not going to fit into a really pretty box. It's going to be challenging, and I think we need all the tools we can get in order to make that assessment. Mr. Brown was the developer of the CIRR system, and I think it probably is more fail-safe than the cubic feet per acre, which is very minimal in scope. I don't understand why the state doesn't want a more comprehensive review and a formula that kind of gives you an output as opposed to one item that is fairly subject. Even in parts of Josephine County, I know personally I could apply a different cubic feet per acre for commercial forestry depending on where you are located, because I know the northern part up towards Wolf Creek, they produce trees a lot better than they do in O'Brien or some of these other places in the county. I'm a proponent of something broader or more specific than a range. Right now, we have 20 to 80 is what we're trying to assess. We don't have anything in our code that I understand that is a specific threshold that if you can prove a cubic feet per acre, you're good to go, or one way or the other. Right now, it's between 20 and 80 is what we've got. 50 is what's being proposed, I understand, in this regional pilot project report. It's just a report. What Mr. Converse provided to the board is a draft, in my opinion. And the challenge that I see with this whole thing, because there has been one point of continuity, frankly, between both Douglas and Jackson County, besides their two planners, was me. I'm the only commissioner, I think, that has shepherded this, because they've got Tim Freeman, who's been assigned. Susan Morgan is still there. She was the Douglas County commissioner assigned to this project. It has been challenging to get two counties to agree, and that's what Executive Order 1207 requires, is that two counties come together and have kind of a one application. And it's still an application. It's not something that's just necessarily going to be approved. But I do feel like we are missing an opportunity to address certain inadequacies that we know. I mean, And that's why Tim Freeman wrote this legislation, and then the governor approved it in an executive order. We've got shortcomings. There's a threshold for exclusive farmland that's hard to meet in Josephine County. We're not the Willamette Valley, and it's a cookie-cutter application of a code that isn't accurate. It isn't reflective of our community. And so I think that I would have more incentive to work harder on getting these things addressed if I didn't have to couple my decision or my issue with another county and go specifically to DLCD and get approved. That threshold is really challenging, and probably I'm not very optimistic about any kind of success that is going to be met by this, but that doesn't mean we're not going to try, and we will review those comments that you made. I'd like to talk to you offline because, as you can probably well imagine, there's a lot of issues, and it's not necessarily efficient for the entire board or the audience to really weigh in on or hear all those things, but I do appreciate you coming and presenting those things. Mr. Armstrong, I think we're going to definitely review all that the city has put together on their comments. They've been hosting these meetings, and frankly, the county in large part has somewhat been left out, even though we've wanted, I have wanted, to participate as much as possible and come up to speed. I have the final draft from Laura Glover of what we rejected last time, and they're going back to their engineers. But I don't want to speak for the board, but we have given them very specific directions of things that we want to have explored, and anything less than that, and you're not going to get a stamp of approval from this Board of Commissioners, and we've been very clear about that from the get-go. This is in the best interest of development and the city. Our opinion is that we're the only representatives of the owners of properties in that area, and that's not exactly the highest priority for this Board of Commissioners. There's a lot of other properties to develop within the city. We want to see a success on this project. That doesn't mean that we couldn't find common ground, but we're going to move as diligently as necessary in order to try to accommodate that. And won't be rushed in that matter. So those are the comments that I have, and I don't think I left too much out.
Commissioner Hick.
No, I would defer to the comments already made.
Okay. All right. I will entertain a motion on item 2A.
Madam Chair, I move for approval of order number 2016-028 in the matter of authorizing legalization of a portion of Allen Creek Road, County Road 3410.
And I'll second.
Any further discussion?
Just want to thank staff for the diligence on this.
Thank you. Okay, roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Item 2B, this is the approval of the Chamber Business Retention Expansion Funding Request.
And I'll move for approval of the Chamber Business Retention and Expansion BRNE Funding Request of $4,500 from the county.
I'll second that.
Thank you. Any comment?
Yes. Madam Chair, one of my reservations, this is the third survey that I've been a participant in or an endorser. One of my criticisms of the initial one, I think it was the one that was done coming on 6 years ago, was that it seemed as though, and I was on the chamber, I was affiliated with all that, we do an assessment, we'd know, it almost sometimes seemed overwhelming because the economy wasn't very good back then, not that it's a whole lot better now, but it is progressing. It seemed overwhelming. They go out to almost, I think at that time they were doing 70 interviews. These interviews are almost an hour long. The portfolio of problems was huge, and I can understand that they felt overwhelmed, and we didn't seemingly make a lot of progress on trying to fix just a couple of them between that survey and the last one. I wouldn't say different leadership, but the leadership has really taken a different approach to these surveys and tried to pick out just a handful of things. Can't solve them all, but what things can they solve? And I feel like they've made really good progress hosting these training elements for staff down there and the transition of family-owned businesses. Each of us could think about what are those businesses in Josephine County that we use, we rely on, or hold in high esteem. And the people who built those, like Fire Mountain Gyms, they're not young and they're not the entrepreneurs and the young business starters they used to be, they're looking to do something with their business. And it's in Josephine County's best interest that it not just be sold to the highest bidder, moved overseas or to another part of the country. We really need to facilitate them having an opportunity to plan for the future right here in Josephine County. And it's so much, it's easier to keep jobs here. It's the retention and expansion component, rather than try to find a new Fire Mountain Gems out there and convince them to come here. They're already convinced to come here. They love it here. Chris and Stuart Freeman started in the Illinois Valley back when I was a kid and built this into an incredible business. If you look around, there's a ton of those. There's Taylor Sausage in the Illinois Valley, Chuck and Marilyn Taylor. Marilyn Taylor was my second grade teacher. Kurt Krause, Krause Craft is expanding. These people are not going to be the entrepreneurs of yesterday. Need to remain as businesses of tomorrow here in Josephine County. And I think that this is really valuable for exploring those things that may go unseen and then just doing whatever we can to try to fix those problems locally. So I fully support it. They're doing great things, and I look forward to hearing what they find out from their interviews. Most of these interviews, or all of them, are done by volunteers. It's an incredible amount of work. The compilation and kind of the assessment stuff is done by a very well-respected contractor. That's most of what we're paying for in publications and stuff like that, what the county is partnering in. So I think it's well worth the money.
Thank you.
Sorry. Yes. No, the idea of part of the difficulty in Josephine County is obviously trying to beat down the idea that we're all going to turn into a dust bowl next month. That's part of the struggle. There has to be, and there is, a more structured, positive idea that we are going to survive. That's the good news, and the bad news is we're going to survive. So how are we going to survive as a county? I mean, that's the challenge. And as Commissioner Hare alluded to, the change of direction in the last several years has really been very beneficial of identifying steps and not just some amorphous big picture. But steps, what can be done? How do people feel about things? What are the steps that can be taken? And I think the chamber has done the county a big benefit in trying to identify some of these things in this research and expansion work that they're doing. So anything we can do, it's to the county's benefit, and we are all benefited by that. So I totally support it.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't recognize, and you probably were going to do this, but just to make sure, Steve Rowe is the chairman of that committee, has been for a number of years, and he gives so much of his time, his personal time and energy, and Colleen Martin at the chamber, and a whole host of other people that meet at least once a month. Commissioner Walker is the current liaison. Commissioner Heck is the liaison to the chamber, Government Relations Committee, if I'm correct. They do their own dedication of time, and it's invaluable, I think, to bettering our community.
You're correct. Yes, Steve Rowe and Colleen Martin really championed the previous study in regards to the necessity of the business retention and passing on those successful businesses to family members. Mr. Rowe is part of a family business, as is Jeff Siegel. And we have a lot of businesses here from the Gates and many others, Dutch Brothers, almost all the entrepreneurial businesses that were established here as much as 50, 60, 70 years ago. They're now in their third generation, but sometimes with the advent of technology and all of the opportunities out there, some of the children of those families are not here, and so they're concerned about how those businesses are going to continue. And they addressed that in the last one, and I think that because it was so real to the Rowe family is why Steve was so dedicated to making sure, because he could see other, even though they've done a good job of it, there's other family businesses in town that were struggling as to how are we going to pass on our success. How are we going to keep this as a viable part of our community? So I look forward to seeing what they come up with in the next one, because you're right, the one that was done 6 to 9 years ago, whatever, that was during a period of economic downturn. The problems were just huge for all the businesses. But they are coming out of that, and I think that what we're seeing now is a resurgence of success in a lot of our businesses here. When I talk to them, they say, gee, business hasn't been better in 10 years, you know, so things are turning around, but that brings a whole new set of problems. So I think this report is going to be very valuable to us because now we're in an upswing economy, and I think that's going to be good information, and they will respond to it appropriately and provide whatever is needed at that time. So thank you. Okay, roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Moving on to the consent calendar, we have minutes from meetings, a weekly business session of July 6th, 2016, the county administration workshop on July 7th, 2016, general discussion July 12th, 2016, and another general discussion on July 13th, 2016. Do I have a motion to approve these minutes?
And I would move for approval of the consent calendar of items 4A.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay, being none. Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. Okay. We have other matters that we need to bring before the board today. None. Any other items you wish to discuss?
Madam Chair, I just have one. Yesterday I was visited by a young man. I believe he was 10 years old. Yes. I'm not going to mention his name, but I think it's just an example of the fine youth that we have in our community, and I wanted to take a moment and read the letter that he presented personally to me yesterday. And this is an invitation to anyone in Josephine County. Ideally, I think usually it's a business owner, but really it could be a group of families, people that might want to participate in supporting the youth of tomorrow or the leaders of tomorrow. And I'd say that it starts with, I'm 10 years old, and this is my first year in 4-H. Would you like to consider supporting me and 4-H by purchasing a swine at the fair this year? If so, then please come on Saturday, August 20th, 2016, to the Josephine County Fair at 10 a.m. 4-H has taught me a lot about food, records, and much more. My favorite part about 4-H is spending time with my pig, Rocky, and talking with my partner. 4-H, Mr. Bickle, and my partner, Daniel Grimm, have taught and helped me a lot. Mr. Bickle taught me about castrating, breeding, helping a pig give birth, feeding, walking a pig, finding out if they are pregnant, and much more. Helping with castrating was not my favorite part, which I can attest is not my favorite part. If you buy my pig, I plan to use the money in the following ways. Pay back my parents for all the money that I have spent to help me in 4-H. 10% to God, 10% to my college fund, 20% to the car fund, saving early for that, 20% for my martial arts and survival club, 40% for other kind of spending, and enclosed is a brochure and other things of information. So I just wanted to encourage people to consider it. We're about a month away, so the Jackson County Fair is happening right now. But on August 20th at 10 a.m., even if you're not interested in purchasing, it would be... It's quite an experience to come out to the Junior Livestock Auction. It's put on by the Young Farmers Association for 4-H and FFA kids. When I was growing up, there were probably over 300 hogs. Now we're probably down to just over maybe 100, 150 total animals. It's really seen a decline, I think, is the advent of this mobile cell device and other distractions for kids during the summertime, which are fine, but I think that there's something morally beneficial about getting your hands dirty, in my opinion. I grew up on a ranch, and I just think that kids, there's no substitute for the kind of program that 4-H and FFA provides, and you don't have to just raise an animal. There's a whole host of other programs, but what I'm really going after today is if you have questions about how to participate in the Junior Livestock Auction as a supporter, purchaser, Commissioner Heck, I think we've all purchased an animal in the past. I think that was my first interaction with Commissioner Heck as the director of the Gospel Rescue Mission. I just love the way the auctioneers, and they're going to donate that hog to the Gospel Rescue Mission. Give them a big hand, ladies and gentlemen. Just the way they do that every year, it's been a part of my life, and it's quite a special thing. So if you have an opportunity on August 20th, 10 a.m., to come out and support or just pay witness to what's going on out there. It's a great thing. And support the people who support this. So every year there's a publication and I believe it's probably online, and it's in the newspaper, of people who purchased animals at the fair. And those are the first places that I go to patronize in Josephine County and around Southern Oregon. So they're not all from Grants Pass or the city limits or even Josephine County. They're from Medford and other parts of the state. So it's just a really great program, and I can't say enough.
As is evidenced by the letter composed by a 10-year-old child, which is very irreverent.
Yeah, there we go. It's a good letter.
Yeah. Just a couple of things for me is, I mean, the liaison of the, probably to be the liaison of the fairgrounds. And, of course, as you all realize, part of the fairgrounds, horse racing takes place there. That's separate from the actual organization of the Josephine County Fairgrounds. It's a private group sponsors that, pays for it. But they had a very good turnout this year, and they were very pleased with everything. Of course, a big help was the weather. That did not hurt at all. And so there was a very good turnout on that. The sponsorships for the fair itself is twice as much as it was last year already. And so there is a sense of improvement attitudinal-wise, but also that is changing over to the dollar aspect as well. So that represents a lot of work, but also a lot of commitment from local businesses, et cetera. Wheeler Toyota has taken a yeoman's job of sponsoring. They have banner placements there on the fairgrounds stands, but that represents they are contributing a large amount of money to make the fairgrounds solid, to make the fair successful. The work is being done on the commercial building, the big building. We have a lot of displays. It looks like a four-way cross section with a center in the middle. That is under renovation, and part of the renovation is revealed a little oops, and this is all done under Commissioner Hagan's reign when he was here, and so it's all his fault. But it has revealed some construction issues that are like, you've got to be kidding me, issues. And they're able to be resolved. They're in the process of being resolved. And because the fairgrounds is in this urban growth boundary situation, planning and all those things is a city project. So we get into this two government roles again. But the city's been very responsive to the necessity of getting this thing done, and that'll all be officialized on Monday when they sign and talk about the whole situation. And so it's progress is being made. It should not be any problem. The fair will open, that the commercial building will be used, et cetera, et cetera. The only other thing is there's two large groups played a large role. The assembly of different churches get together every year, and they serve Grants Pass, it's called. And there was a large number of people that worked in a variety of projects around the county, and there was a large group that consisted of about 50 volunteers that went down to the fairgrounds and did a large amount of that stuff that nobody likes to do, like cutting back blackberry bushes, that kind of a thing. But also the Oath Keepers has been very active at the fairgrounds in painting, cleaning up the horse barns, and they have been, and this is not just this one time, but they have done this several times over the year, and our appreciation goes to all of those groups. The best news as far as the fairgrounds is concerned is that they ended the year in June the 30th in the black, and fiscally in the black. So they do not receive any general fund money, and they are on a produce or die basis as far as the county is concerned, and they have done a good job in the last several years of turning this big ship around to where it is not a draw on the income. It is now contributing to and producing income in the county. Finally, I just want to read something that I wrote up, and I apologize for the less than correct awe-inspiring display, but I wanted to make sure that I read this on this particular day. And in light of what has taken place in our country over the last several weeks, I believe that each of us needs to pause and reflect upon these difficult times. These times show our resolve as a people. We are being called to reevaluate what we, as citizens of Josephine County, deem important. In the area of law enforcement, as we try to regain our societal footing of normalcy, I would hope that we can corporately say that we truly appreciate those men and women who serve us in the law enforcement community in Josephine County. Specifically, I want to say thank you to all involved, Public Safety Director Bill Landis and the officers with the Grants Pass Public Safety Department, Sheriff Dave Daniel and all of the deputies in our Sheriff's Office, Community Corrections Director Nate Gowerand and his officers, and District Attorney Ryan Mulkins and his fine staff. These are folks that carry a badge and oftentimes carry a gun to go about the daily life, their daily life in Josephine County for our, as citizens, our benefit. My appreciation does not mean blind approval of every aspect and action of the law enforcement community, but I believe it does demand of us a deep-seated appreciation for the work they are doing that allows us any sense of security in home and person. Anyone looking at the national scene cannot help but feel as if our society is losing focus as to truly important matters. As the citizens of Josephine County, we have the opportunity to lead in enabling others to refocus, to remind ourselves of how fortunate we are to live in a county whose law enforcement community is responsive to its citizens, as well as performing so well the tasks that keep all law-abiding citizens safe. I support you and deeply appreciate all that you are doing for us in Josephine County, those of you who are involved directly in the law enforcement community. My appreciation to them all.
Thank you, Commissioner Heck. Very appropriate. I would just like to say, in addition to that, you mentioned, you know, society needs to step up, and I read the other day where there were people calling saying we need greater leadership to stop the violence against our police officers and the rogue police officers who commit acts that are not in compliance with the rules in which they were taught. But society is us. Society is every one of us. Society is one at a time, each person taking responsibility. So often we hear and see people touting that they're and everything about cloaking themselves in the freedom and the rights they get in this country, but they fail to assume the responsibility and the mantle of that responsibility of having those rights and freedoms. So it's a two-way street. You will not have one without the other, and I think that oftentimes what we're seeing is people who feel that they have been wronged. Maybe they have, maybe they haven't. Doesn't matter. It's what they feel. But then they associate themselves with individuals who may not have the best interest of the community at heart. But then mob mentalities set in, and the mob mentalities are the ones that create such havoc. And oftentimes it's said about police officers going out there and, you know, putting their lives on the line for us, and that is true. But oftentimes we forget about the mental anguish they take home with them every night when they go home after work. They see the horrible side of life. They see the bad things that people do. And just because they go home doesn't mean they can turn it off or erase those memories. So it affects them and their personal lives, and it affects their families. So and honoring these people and praying for them to be safe, remember their families too, because they also pay that price. Thank you for saying that, Commissioner Heck. That was very, very gracious, very nice. Okay, a couple more announcements. The Back to the 50s is coming up, so if you're so inclined to go to the sock hop or put on your saddle shoes and bobby socks, if you don't know what those are, oh dear. And if you have a poodle skirt, the guys, they wore T-shirts that they rolled up on the sleeves or the jeans with the cuffs in the bottom or whatever, but it's the time to do the Back to the 50s, which is a very fun and welcome event here in Grants Pass. It's become a tradition here, and it's a fun event. Also coming up will be the airport days. That's September 3rd. I saw the posters start going out just this week. And the airport days is out at the airport. There's food and fun and demonstrations and repellers and all kinds of fun things that have to do with aviation at our airport in Merlin. And, of course, there's always those other events that are going on, like concerts in the park. The summers are just full of things going on. You got concerts in the park, of course, sponsored a lot by the Chamber of Commerce. And we talked a lot today about the fair, about attending the livestock auction and the importance of the 4-H to the children and the community and the organizations here. But the premium books are out, and we need people to enter their best work, whether they do crafting, whether they do sewing, whether they do canning, pickling, or whatever. There's all kinds of exhibits out there, and people need to enter. There are some categories. We didn't get a lot of entries the last couple of years, but I tell you what, I've been hosted by a lot of people here, and I know there's an awful lot of really good craftspeople and cooks out there. So we'd like to see some of that stuff at the fair. And who knows, you may take home the blue ribbon, so that would be great. Okay, any further announcements?
Just on the Battle of the Bands. They have a Battle of the Bands this year at the fair. They had originally, I think it was 15 different band entries that had been culled down to 5 different bands. I believe it was 5. And then they're going to have the final 3. The top band will receive a $600 award, and then a $350 and $150 award for second and third. And that will all be determined at the fair, and you know, all the hoopla goes with that. So if you have any children involved in that thing, congratulations to you. And I realize you're probably going deaf by now, but it's just a fun time, and it builds a community spirit, too, and it's really neat to see.
And don't forget the food. All you have to do is say fair, and I think cotton candy. You know, those words of association. Okay. It is 10:06. We are adjourned, and have a great week.